You are listening to a free version of the Majority Report with Sam Steeder. To support this show and get another 15 minutes of daily program, go to majority.fm, please.
The Majority Report with Sam Steeder.
It is Friday, July 17th, 2020. My name is Sam Steeder. This is the five-time award-winning Majority Report. We are broadcasting live. Steps and steps and steps from the industrially ravaged Gowanus Canal in the heartland of America, downtown Brooklyn, USA. It's Casual Friday, folks. In the era of COVID, on the program today, Ben Dixon, proprietor of the Benjamin Dixon Show. Also on the program today, Matthew Film Guy, proprietor, the Matthew Film Guy eBay site. Also on the show, we are number one. U.S. shatters the single day record for COVID-19 infections with over 75,000. It also had over 1,400 deaths yesterday. The most since May 20th. Cases going up in 41 states. The Georgia governor is suing the city of Atlanta for requiring masks. Meanwhile, the Texas governor vows, we will not respond regardless of how bad it gets. Dianne Feinstein threatens to immiserate citizens of states being immiserated by stupid governors. And the political conventions are set to be sad affairs this year. Meanwhile, the right-wingers on the Supreme Court punt on Florida's poll tax. What's old is new again, ladies and gentlemen. And in Portland, unidentified federal police defy U.S. senators' call to get out of the city. Trump and the Republicans are bleeding support over their coronavirus reactions. And of course, the CDC won't release school guidance because why would they? And Wheel of Misfortune. Former game show host, current right-wing podcast host, Chuck Woolery, goes from COVID denial to revealing both his sons have it, and then deletes his account. And lastly, IDW stalwart Eric Weinstein is a baby. And today, I attempt to burp him. All this and more on today's program. Yeah, it's Friday, folks. What can I tell you? I haven't started day drinking yet. I've held off. I'm with the kids. I don't want to be a bad example. I will get to the Eric Weinstein stuff. I was hoping to have him on the show on Monday, but apparently about, I don't know if he did it this morning or when, he blocked me on Twitter.
Oh gosh.
He blocked me. That which hurts. I mean, we'll talk about that later, but it hurts because
he's disrupting your feedback loops.
I'm like, you know, people don't appreciate how hard it is to be neurotypical. And we'll get into that. We'll get into that later. Thank you for joining us, ladies and gentlemen. Pleasure to have you. It is we've made it to another week. And, you know, on some level, the stories every day, it just, you know, it's more or less the same story with a slightly larger number every day in terms of what's happening with coronavirus. This is I want to say it's a slow motion tragedy. And in many respects, it is. And I mean, It is very hard in the midst of this to wrap our, for me to wrap my head around it, because everything that we contemplated in terms of problems that we were going to have with the economy are going to be much worse than we had anticipated. Everything that we had contemplated in terms of like what's going to happen to, you know, kids who are supposed to be going to school and kids who are supposed to go to school for the sake of their education, kids who are supposed to go to school, not just for the sake of their education, but the ability to have meals, kids who are going to school and not only what are they going to lose out in terms of education, in terms of nutrition, but also for many children who are victimized, school was their opportunity to be in regular contact with mandatory responders. In other words, people who must report when they see things that signal that children may be going through some type of duress at home or abuse. Not to mention, you know, small businesses, restaurants, the economic fallout, and we don't know the long-term health fallout from all these things. And we have failures of our government across the board, both parties, not to the same degree, in terms of responding to this from an economic standpoint. But we have what I think is probably, I don't think there is an analog. You know, Wilson did not mention, apparently, the pandemic in 1918. World War I was going on. I think there was some theory. I mean, the federal government, I don't know if it had necessarily the resources. And obviously, they were fighting a war. But I think what we're going through now is unprecedented in the history of the world. And I don't mean, I mean, to have a government so willfully, and to have a political party so willfully in denial of a pandemic, it's just utterly bizarre. It is utterly bizarre. It is so hard to wrap your heads around this. I spoke to David Wallace Wells on Ring of Fire this week. It was supposed to be like a 15-minute interview. I think we talked for like 45 minutes about it. So if you want to check that out, if you want more of that, like, you know, more of this just sort of like shock, you could check that out. But here is the good news, ladies and gentlemen. I can sit here and I can tell you that, you know, we've had a president who has been willfully avoiding, dealing with this pandemic. Here's the good news. Donald Trump has said, you haven't seen nothing yet. Here is clip number one.
Thought possible. So we have many exciting things that we'll be announcing over the next 8 weeks, I would say.
Oh, 8 weeks.
Things that nobody has even contemplated, thought about, thought possible, and things that we're going to get done. And we have gotten done. We've started in most cases, but it's going to be a very exciting 8 weeks. 8 weeks, like I think, Mike, we can honestly say nobody's ever going to see 8 weeks like we're going to have, because we really have. We have. We're taking on immigration, taking on education. We're taking on so many aspects of things that people were hopelessly tied up in knots in Congress. They can't. They've been working on some of these things for 25, 30 years. Wasn't happening. But you'll see. levels of detail, and you'll see levels of thought that a lot of people believed very strongly we didn't have in this country. We're going to get things done. We're going to get things done that they've wanted to see done for a long, long time. So I think we'll start sometime on Tuesday. We'll be discussing our one plan on suburbia, but that's one of many, many different plans. Then we're going into the immigration, the world of immigration, the world of education. We're going into the world of health care, very complete health care. And we have a lot of very exciting things to discuss. But cutting of regulation has been really something that I felt we could do, and we could do fairly easily. Nothing's easy in this country. We had statutory requirements where we'd do phase one and then we'd have to wait 90 days. We'd do phase two and we'd have to wait 60 days. We'd do phase three and we said, let's do phase four. Sir, I'm sorry, you have to wait 1 year.
Wow. So there it is, folks. God knows what he's got planned for the next 8 weeks. These are going to be the, it's going to be the summer of detail. It sounds like what they're doing, I mean, I'm trying to divine, you know, what a lunatic is talking about. But when they're talking about education, when they're talking about immigration in particular, if you think back to all of the executive orders that has been reversed by the Supreme Court, it is because they have been so horribly sloppy at these things. Muslim ban. The census question. What was the most recent one? The DACA thing. And it sounds to me like they're going to try another bite at the apple of all these different things. And somebody said, we assure you, Mr. President, we're going to be detail oriented this time. We're going to do it right. And so, we should be concerned about what he's going to do in the next 8 weeks. I mean, and frankly, you know, we're going to have this problem of having anxiety about what Donald Trump is going to do, not just obviously for the next 8 weeks, August, September, October, really closer to 12 to 15 weeks. And then in the event that he loses the election, I would anticipate another 10 weeks of God knows what. We'll talk more about what's going on in Portland. If you've been listening to the AM Quickie, you heard about this Portland story 2 or 3 days ago, and we've been following it on that on the Quickie. But what's going on there? I don't know if folks have seen the video. It's lunacy. You have fully, like, geared up in fatigues, non-military personnel, some type of federal unnamed police force, literally no insignia, no badges, no nothing. Just a little sticker that says police on it in a fully paramilitary uniform, dragging people off the street and shoving them into rental vans. No insignia, just rental vans that they got, I don't know, at Hertz or something. They grab these people, they blindfold them, they bring them to a court, then they may or may not release them. It's messed up. I don't know what else to say. I mean, it's...
Hopefully we can get a letter about it.
Yeah, we definitely need a letter about it. You know, it was interesting to see the Ron Wyden and Jeff Merkley both like weighed in on this. And obviously, you know, the mayor of Portland is a little weak, it seems to me. But this is nuts. It really is nuts. And you wonder, like, what's going on here?
Yeah, Chad Wolf is out there. The director of DHS is out in Portland this morning, like, you know, posting photos of graffiti walls and things like that and saying, like, this is the reason why we're out here, is the defacing of, you know, federal property. which is just such a flimsy reason. And I'm begging them to do a news conference and tell us what's going on.
Well, I mean, look, we had Bill Barr assemble these people at Lafayette Plaza. They obviously did not disassemble these teams of federales. I don't know what you would call them, federal paramilitaries. And they're, you know, I don't know if there's some type of test pilot that's going on out there or what, but it's weird. It seems really weird that the head of Department of Homeland Security is overseeing an operation to get rid of graffiti. I mean, aren't we led to believe that there's more important things going on? But maybe not. I don't know. It's very disturbing. And again, I remind you, I have the book right there. Ordinary Men is the book it's called. It's about the Holocaust in Poland. And the military, they had real trouble with the military carrying out these type of orders at first. So they brought in police. Folks, how do I get to bed these days with this? How do I stay asleep? Well, CBD tincture. And it's a very specific one that I have been taking now for what feels like months. And it's been very effective. I don't do it every night. I do it like 4 or 5 nights a week. I don't like to do anything on a regular basis. It gets me worried. Like I don't want to, I'm like a constantly training myself not to use it. But with that said, Sunset Lake CBD has been an awesome product that I've been using. We've gotten incredible feedback about, all of them. I mean, it is a farm located outside of Burlington, Vermont. It was originally a dairy farm that provided milk for Ben & Jerry's ice cream. They decided to diversify the farm, start to grow hemp. Sunset Lake CBD hemp is 100% pesticide free. They only use organic fertilizers. You can go on their website and look at the third party test results for all their products at Sunset Lake CBD. They work with the University of Vermont to, you know, do use regenerative farming practices. Their business practices are awesome. They have a $15 minimum wage. The company is majority owned by employees. They sell the smokable CBD, a bunch of different versions. Matt can talk about that in a moment. They have pre-rolls. If you're not a smoker, I get a little nervous about smoking because of my smoking back in the day with nicotine. I don't want to get back into that. They have amazing gummies. 1,000 milligram sour bears. They also have the tincture. They also have CBD infused coffee, which I will drink on the weekends. It's a dark roast. I love it. They have topical salves that have CBD infused in it. And we've had multiple people email us that it's been very helpful with their arthritis. I don't like to put stuff on me like that, except for occasionally if I've got my, what do you call it? Eczema is acting up and I put on some of the tincture. It worked. I don't think that's what you're supposed to use it for, but I was like, I got to do something. CBD. SunsetLakeCBD.com. Matt, tell everybody about your experience from the smokable end of things.
Yeah, I was introduced to a new product category in the smokables, which is called Smalls, special sauce Smalls. If you look at them, they're little tiny nuggets that you can put straight in your grinder, which I find very convenient and enjoy. So,
and check out the Smalls. And you mix that
just
with
whatever you might want to mix it with, you know, recreational things like tobacco and other things.
Wonderful. There you go. Check it out, sunsetlakecbd.com. If you use the coupon code BESTISLEFT, you get 20% off. 20% off with Sunset Lake CBD, CBD.com. Left is best, 20% off. And this month, the month of July, they're donating 4.20%, 420, of all online sales to the Drug Policy Alliance at drugpolicy.org. Their mission is to advance those policies and attitudes that best reduce the harms of both drug use and drug prohibition, and to promote the sovereignty of individuals over their minds and their bodies. So check it out, sunsetlakecbd.com. You will not be disappointed at all, I promise. Do we have Ben?
I'm not seeing him yet, actually.
Let's see. All right, well, let's play another clip here. So Donald Trump, I mean, they seem to be rather desperate in attempting to find some type of theme that is actually going to work with that's actually going to work in terms of their reelection. Here is Donald Trump talking about appliances.
His favorite consumer culture, his favorite appeal.
Base is lower than that. We're bringing back consumer choice in home appliances so that you can buy washers and dryers, shower heads and faucets. So shower heads, you take a shower, the water doesn't come out. You want to wash your hands, the water doesn't come out. So what do? You just stand there longer, or you take a shower longer? Because my hair, I don't know about you, but it has to be perfect. Perfect.
Yay, your hair needs to be perfect.
Dishwashers, you didn't have any water, so the people that do the dishes, you press it, and it goes again, and you do it again and again. So you might as well give them the water, because you'll end up using less water. So we made it so dishwashers now have a lot more water. And in many places, in most places of the country, water is not a problem. They don't know what to do with it. It's called rain. They don't have a problem. And old-fashioned incandescent light bulbs, I brought them back. I brought them back. They have two nice qualities. They're cheaper and they're better. They look better. They make you look so much better. That's important to all of us. But they're better and much cheaper. And they were mandated out, legislated out, and we brought them back, and they're selling like hotcakes. We stopped the...
This is just sheer insanity. I mean, first of all, I don't think the guy's worked a dishwasher in ages.
He said the people that do the dishes.
Yeah, exactly. And the issue isn't that there's low water flow in the dishwashers. It was that they had eliminated a certain product in the dishwasher liquid that because it was bad for the environment. And then they just replaced it with extra rinse stuff so that you could curb it. I mean, the best thing that ever happened to the light bulb industry was that mandate. It took them a while, but the prices and the variety of LCD lights and the fact that you can get these lights that are going to last for literally years. But even put aside the value of those regulations. Who's voting on this stuff at this point? Like, they're in a complete denial. They have locked themselves in such a box they can't admit. We're in the middle of a pandemic. It's nuts. All right, let's let Ben Dixon in. Do we have him?
Yep, here he comes.
The value of those regulations.
Ben?
Yep, this is me.
There he is. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome. Would like to welcome to the program the host and the proprietor of the Benjamin Dixon Show, Ben Dixon. Ben, how are you?
I'm doing great, man. Sorry about that. I was sitting on Skype. I'm just so used to connecting with you guys via Skype, and I forgot we're in pandemic mode here. So
we're in pandemic mode. You're looking well, all things considered.
Yeah, thanks, man. You guys too. You're looking great, Sam.
That's only because I'm only 5 days out from vacation. Another week, I'm gonna fall to pieces again. So, all right, Ben, let's just start with this because you're in Georgia. Your governor is suing the mayor of Atlanta, or I don't know if the mayor particularly, but the city of Atlanta,
mm-hmm.
To prevent the city from mandating masks. Mm-hmm. I don't even understand. What is Brian Kemp doing?
So Brian Kemp, I honestly can't put my finger on the motivation behind this other than, the fact that there's just a contingency of people across this country who are looking for something to be aggrieved about. Like, to them, this is their big statement of liberty and Americana. This is their big stand against the tyrannical government, masks in a pandemic, right? And so I think he's trying to coddle them. I think he's trying to appease them. He's trying to make have best of both worlds, where he can insist that people wear masks but not install a mandate. It's lunacy. I think you called it lunacy earlier in the broadcast, and I really don't know what there's no win here. And it's hard for me to just put my finger on it, but there's really no win here. It's going to lead to more people dying. And so it's a political statement. Obviously, he's not going to miss any chance to attack Keisha Lance Bottoms. I mean, there's plenty to attack her about, but the things that he's attacking her over are clearly not the right things.
I mean, give me your sense of how folks are reacting to this. I mean, what are people on the, like, I don't know. I occasionally run into people who are like, I don't want to wear a mask, but it's really sort of more out of ignorance rather than, I mean, I just remember months ago in the midst of this doing, I can't even remember who the host was. Clay Travis. Is that possible? I don't know. Somebody like that. Brendan, maybe you can help me out. I can't even remember who it was. It was like a Politicon podcast. I don't know if they're doing it. And I went on with that mayor who was also like a wrestler from Tennessee and some other right winger. And the host was like, so what's the big issue? And I'm like, well, the big issue is, of course, you know, whether we're going to have enough, patient protection equipment and from a logistics standpoint. And then they said the big issue is freedom and liberty. And I'm like, wait, what? What are you talking about? I hadn't even heard about this, but this is like cult stuff.
Yeah. Yeah. And actually, but it actually makes sense. Like I've honestly been trying to figure out this derangement, right? They're committed to this to the point of death. If you saw the city hall, city council meeting in Utah, two nights ago, where they were jam packed in, and I would say at least 70% of them were not wearing masks because that was their big political statement. That was their big stand. They're willing to die not to wear a mask. And to them, they equate wearing a mask to being something worth dying over, the same way protesters were willing to go out in the pandemic and protest police brutality. So there's an equivalence in their mind that's happening. They equate police brutality and being willing to die over police brutality to the government requiring them to wear a mask in a pandemic. So a cult, definitely, but it's just a level of ignorance, man. It's a level of stupidity that I really am still amazed by. Stupidity even to the point of killing their own family members. Like, people are going to die because of this.
I mean, Chuck Woolery, I don't know what's happening with his sons, but you know, he's just like one of these right wing guys online who's pushing this, like, everybody's lying about COVID. It's not real. And then he deleted his account after he announced that his kid, I'm not laughing. You know, I hope his kids are fine.
Right.
But nevertheless, like, he owns part of it. You know,
right.
Those kids are out there. Their dad is out there saying everybody it's not real. I mean, he's partly responsible for his kids, having the attitude they go out and then that might put them at risk.
Right. Right.
I mean, it's fascinating that we're living in such a weird era where we have what's going on in Portland, and the video is harrowing. Do we have video of this, guys?
We can play the clip that we played yesterday. Yeah.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Let's play that clip because there's multiple clips of this. There was another one that I saw the other night where, you've got unmarked police vehicles. They're not police vehicles.
Right.
They're just vehicles. They're right. Rentable vans. They're like consumer rentable vans filled with guys in paramilitary gear who are supposedly federal policemen coming from like the Customs Border Patrol, maybe from the, right. the federal prison system. But look at this video and the idea that all these liberty, you know, don't tread on me folks are worried about masks, but they're not worried right. about the one scenario that they have said over and over again to justify every gun that they've ever owned. Look at this.
What are you doing? Use your words. What are you doing? Use your words. What are you doing?
I haven't done anything wrong.
Use your words. What is going on?
We need to know.
Who are you?
Why are you taking
NLG will get you out. What's your name? Tell us your name.
What's your name?
Okay, you're fine. We'll get you out.
Bro, what?
All right. We got you, friend.
We got you.
The fuck?
NLG.
You just violated their rights.
Oh. Kidnapping people.
You just violated their rights.
Thanks for keeping them fucking. Oh.
Wow.
So the voices you hear are legal observers. That's NLG. And I imagine that the woman's voice you hear, she may be also a teacher. She's
use your words.
Use your words. With young kids. And apparently that person who was, here's the thing. That person doesn't even know if they were arrested.
Right.
Like they've been released. They don't know if they were arrested because right. there was nothing formalized about any of that process.
Right.
And we don't know how many people have been rolled up by this squad. We don't know any of it.
Yeah.
I just this idea that we're not hearing right wingers, you know, worried about this at all.
Again, Sam, that's why I want to drive something home, right? As I still try to piece this together for them, for right wingers, they're constantly searching for something to be oppressed by, right? To feign oppression, to be like they're the victims. And in this ridiculous world of America in 2020, their victimhood is centered around being asked to wear or being required to wear a mask. Meanwhile, we have literal like examples of human rights, civil rights violations happening right in front of them. And then most of them take the position of, oh, well, there's some reasonable explanation, or don't get excited or twisted out of shape over this. But in the terms of what they're being asked to do with masks, it's like it is the greatest oppression that they have ever faced in the existence of oppression. And they're willing to die on behalf of it. So we've got this this imbalance in common sense in this country. But it's because they have to perform. They don't have any reasonable reason to actually say that they are oppressed. So they have to create it. Meanwhile, they have to ignore what's going on to the rest of the world, to the rest of America, which is clearly a violation of our constitutional rights.
Yeah, I'm constantly sort of flummoxed by this, to be honest with you. That there's, I mean, I am and I'm not, I guess.
Right.
You know, like obviously I've watched this stuff develop over years, but there is not even an attempt to sort of like
Even in the states' rights issues, right? So there's a question of like the mayor asking them to leave, the governor and the federal government insisting that they have the right to be there, the Department of Homeland Security, all the actors that are actually involved. You know, in any other scenario, I could imagine the Tea Party was basically founded on this idea, right? They demand states' rights for themselves, but when the federal government comes and infringes on the rights of people who they disagree with politically, they just turn a complete blind eye. And again, this is not a shock, but I don't think we have an example more crystallized, better crystallized than this. Like this is pure, uncut example of their hypocrisy and how that hypocrisy is dangerous to the extent that they will turn a blind eye to actual constitutional violations, but would want us to kowtow to their concerns about wearing a mask.
Right. And let's remember, the federal government does not feel it's their responsibility to provide personal protection equipment for hospitals in the states and the municipalities. Right. The federal government does not feel it's their primary responsibility to provide testing resources for states and municipalities. However, when it comes to excessive graffiti,
yes.
Teresa of Portland, they will send unmarked Federales paramilitary squads, and they will fly the DHS, the head of DHS out there, uninvited, to swarm the streets. They shot one guy in the head, fractured his skull, nearly right. killed him. It is, and there is no, I guess what is amazing to me is that it's the first time there's no attempt to reconcile. Usually it's pretty lame and obvious, but there's not even like, we don't even need to pretend.
Right, right. And then it goes even further, right? They're trying to invalidate our anger at this and trying to dictate to us what we should be really upset about. And what we should really be upset about this week is Barry Weiss leaving the New York Times, not the transgressions that we see happening in Portland, right? So they're trying to make us, they're gaslighting us. It's gaslighting of the highest order.
Yeah, no, that part is also, I think, sort of stunning. Here is, look at... Here, play the acting secretary Chad Wolf of DHS. Here he is. He's saying, "Our men and women in uniform are patriots. We will never surrender to violent extremists on my watch." Like, what the? This isn't his job to do any of this stuff.
Can we use the word fascism?
Yeah, I mean, honestly, like. Look at the, and here are the pictures of the absolute, like, why we've got to send out Department of Homeland Security. Look at the graffiti. Are you effing kidding me? This is what the chair of the Department of Homeland Security is going to be is dealing with, is graffiti in Portland. I mean, that's insanity. And you're right. Happy to pivot to this whole sort of like, a cancel culture, just ridiculousness. Let me just preface by saying, are there instances in society where people overstep? Yes. With that said, our society has always been cancel culture. Our society, in fact, the people who are getting canceled now, whatever that means, it is because there has been a change over the past 8 years, let's say, 4 with Obama, 4 with Trump, maybe a little bit longer, whatever you want to say when the threshold was, where what we as a culture have deemed to be appropriate right. has changed.
Right.
That doesn't mean you get arrested. It just means that you are left out of the conversation in some ways because we just don't appreciate as a culture. These are people who they got canceled because they rose at a time where there was a different sort of set of standards and parameters for culture. But the fact is there's a whole host of people who weren't in a position to get canceled because, to continue the TV parlance, their pilots never got picked up.
Right.
They were shut out from day one. Show me the leftist who has been on those pages of the New York Times. Like right. a genuine left. Never, 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 never. And so they're not even in a position to get canceled because they don't get picked up. We have had cancel culture or the prevention of people rising because of what they believe throughout our history. It's just that those people who got were suppressed, you know, believed in equal rights for people, or were black, or were women, or were gay, or trans, or whatever it was. And now that the people who have been were marginalized all those things and kept out of the conversation have moved in, right. people just don't like. Who's now who controls the culture?
Yeah. Yeah. That's, I think you hit the nail on the head there, right? Because there have been generations of people who were never included in any of these conversations. It would be so much more difficult for me to ever get an opportunity to write for the New York Times because of my positions towards entrenched power in this country, right? And it really is based on your position towards and your ideas and your opinions towards entrenched power, right? If you ever become a real threat or have opinions outside of the normal acceptable parameters of the New York Times, you'll never get published there. Tom Cotton can get published there, but someone who believes or who fights against American imperialism would probably never get published there. And actually, it's not even as serious as Tom Cotton in this case, right? We're talking about Barry Weiss. We're talking about a person whose big foray into the national conversation was promoting the quote unquote intellectual dark web, as if that was something substantive and meritorious for us to even discuss, right? So she hasn't really presented anything meaningful into the national discourse in terms of intellectual rigor. All she has been she's just been aggrieved. Everything she ever writes about has been about her being some type of victim. Meanwhile, and there is the reason I tie these two together. Meanwhile, there are real victims out there. There are people who are really being canceled. Those protesters, like graffiti, you're going to jail. We have the full force of the federal government coming down on people because of graffiti. And she wants us to focus, and the people who support her want us to focus on the fact that people on Twitter were mean to her. That's the shit. That's the stuff. Sorry. That really drives me batty.
The IDW is completely, I mean, their entire identification is a function of aggrievement, right? Like this perceived, like we're not able, we have to be in the dark web, despite the fact that they have access to every single platform and more than any of us do.
Right.
I got into it with, I'm not going to go all into it right now, but with Eric Weinstein, who for tweeting out that because he's not neurodivergent, he has experiences every day.
Because he is neurodivergent.
Because he's not neurodivergent, he has experiences every day that parallel the oppression of Black people, he wrote on Twitter. And like it's because he's neurodivergent and he has ideas that cut across the mainstream, so he's harassed on Twitter. And it's like, hey dude, you have a choice. That you have decided, you have this compulsion to put yourself out there as some type of intellectual on Twitter, and right. You don't like the fact that people make fun of you.
Right.
Well, I'm sorry, but an 8-year-old Black kid doesn't have the option of saying, I'm not going to engage in this arena that is going to be critical of me. Like, I mean, it's like just the mindset.
Right.
The myopia, the arrogance that's associated with this is just stunning to me.
Right. And you're dealing with a bunch of people who have not had any confrontation or any pushback or any challenging of their ideas, any accountability in their entire lives. In their entire lives, they've been groomed to hold these positions that, like you said, over the last 8 years, I think that's a perfect timeline. The last 4 years of Obama's administration, people kind of got tired of this ivory tower sort of positioning that a lot of intellectuals and a lot of journalists try to have on Twitter, on social media spaces, and social media in general provided us an opportunity to say, like, hey, your idea is stupid as F or whatever, right? We could tell them that your ideas are, but they have been so used and accustomed to being able to do nothing but transmit. And all we could do was read it in the paper. And if we didn't like it, maybe you write a letter. So now it's the democratization of dissent. Like, we're able to tell them to take their idea and shove it. And they're just not used to that. And to them, that is oppression equivalent to police brutality.
Yeah. And I think that is also analogous to this concept of cancel culture. It's just like, you're just now, we're just living in a society where we hear the voices of a lot of people that have not had an opportunity to be heard in the past.
Right.
And their voices are now coming into the mix and helping the sort of filtering process that always happens in every culture as to who rises to the top and who doesn't. And there are some people who have risen to the top before that filter was essentially deployed or changed, and they're getting booted from their positions because they no longer comport with what culture rewards. Right, and right. For the vast majority of our history, that culture has rewarded only those people who hold a very narrow set of ideas. Yeah, yeah.
Could you imagine like Bull Connor or someone from the 60s, you know, being alive today and online Twitter and just can't imagine why they can't say what they used to say. They can't imagine that they can't use the N-word the way they used to. Yep. They can't imagine that they can't say that America needs to be segregated. And that's the changing of the paradigm. But it happened so much more subtly over a longer period of time that people held and espoused ideas during a period. There was like that grace period where they could hold those ideas. And now they've missed the boat and they're being held accountable for what they used to say. So, you know what I mean? Everybody grows, everyone changes. I think the one part of cancel, if there is such a thing as cancel culture, is the unwillingness to even accept people who say that they have genuinely changed or genuinely apologized or whatever the case may be. But I think that there are just too few examples of people willing to change and apologize. And they're doubling down, tripling down, and pretending as if this is all wrong. Everybody being held accountable is a system that's untenable. When in fact, that's like human life. That's just growing up. Being held accountable for what you say and what you do is just part of natural development.
What's also amazing to me is, like, you know, hear these stories of, like, you know, professor saying, like, I've been contacted by 25 of my colleagues who say that they're afraid to raise this or that in our department meetings. And the fact of the matter is, there has always been that dynamic. Right. It's just that the person who gets contacted by other, like, either the people who are afraid to say something were also afraid to contact anybody else because it was that oppressive of a situation. Right. Or B, that the person they contact still did not have enough authority to make everyone else aware that there were people contacting me secretly. I mean, that's the thing that really is amazing to me about this and so myopic, is that we are witnessing people. It is just one more sort of version of people with privilege being completely oblivious to the privilege that they have been living with over an extended period of time. Now, that doesn't mean that we should celebrate the idea that culture's not as open as we want it to be. But cultures are, that's like what a culture is. Right. Culture defines what's acceptable. Good and what's bad, yeah. And what's acceptable and what's not acceptable. I mean, that's what cultures do.
And so many people who are ostensibly in the left are progressive or whatever, right? There's some key gatekeepers who don't want there to be any accountability in certain categories, right? They're going to stand up and fight against the idea of canceling someone for something egregious, right? But the fact of the matter is that this is a competition of ideas, right? The real marketplace of ideas is a pretty ugly, grim, brutal place where people are going to get torn down. And you can't just say that we're going to fight to protect one side of the spectrum. And that is the quintessential example of free speech. Like, very specifically, like, how many people stand up and see it as a badge of nobility to fight on behalf of the beliefs of Nazis, right? We hear that all the time. I don't believe you, and I don't believe in what you believe in, and I disagree with you, but I'll fight to the death to defend your right to say it. But then they turn around and fight against our right to fight against what they believe, right? So right. That's an imbalance. And I don't know if I have enough time to just say this one last thing.
This is
intentional. I want to say this feigning of outrage, it's not that they are unaware of what they're doing. I think some of them might be, but I think the majority of them realize that they are playing a game, and it is a game of who can be the most aggrieved, because they understand that there's power in being oppressed. The people who are in a position of oppression have righteous indignation on their side. And you can't, what do you do when you have millions of people who are legitimately angry, have a reason to be furious, have a reason to risk their lives to change the system? Well, you pretend like you're equally angry and you're equally you equally are as injured. Passionate about your cause and equally injured. And so they're trying to co-opt that narrative and the power of being oppressed, when in fact, for the most part, they are in positions of oppressors, or they're at least beneficiaries of an oppressive system.
Yeah. I mean, I saw a clip today with Gorka taking a phone call and just be like, you know, some guy calls in and is like, when did it become a crime to be white? And exactly. It's, don't you realize you're white and it's a crime now? It's a crime to even think that, you know, and it is exactly that. It is just simply, you know, how do you push back when you are faced with the reality of what the dynamic has been in this country for an extended period of time? And it's racial, it's in terms of gender, it's in terms of sexual orientation,
economics,
and trans rights, and economics,
yeah.
And just sort of status. And it's just like, you know, things are changing, and yeah. The people who are losing out don't want to lose. And yeah. this is how they're fighting back. And, you know, look, again, are there excesses? Of course, in every yeah. context, right? Like, you know, I shouldn't eat sugar, but I mean, you know, how far are you going to go until you do, you know, to not eat sugar? Like yeah. There's excesses in every dynamic and every change, of course. But the idea that that's the story, the folk is absurd. I mean, right. it's just Christmas stuff.
And even then, Sam, it's like the people who deal in the excesses, right, in the extremes of cancel culture, like who want to cancel you over something minute, right, or something ridiculous. Those people are generally operating on the edges, right? I can't really think of an occasion where someone who has a platform, has position, and has power to influence a conversation on any level, like definitely not on a national level. I'm not really sure that I can think of meaningful examples of people who deal in those extremes. Now, if you go into the edges, you're going to find plenty of examples. But what we do in this kind of competition is we take people from the edges who maybe have 50 followers, and we elevate them and say, look, this is what happens when you engage in cancel culture. When that tweet, that original tweet or that original blog post maybe reached 12 people. But right. So that's what they do. They gauge an entire culture, an entire system, this evolution that you talked about from the 4 years of Obama to the last 4 years of Trump. It's been an evolution, and they gauge that entire evolution based on the extremes. But if we did the same thing to them, then it's an entirely different conversation, because we're talking about some true extremism. So that's a game, that's a tactic, and it's intentional so that they can continuously co-opt the narrative of them being oppressed.
And look, you know, the only thing that I think is like there's any grounds in which to really where there's any type of like sort of substance to any of this is the idea of people losing their ability to their employment, their ability to provide for themselves in some mm-hmm. fashion. I think that's where things get a little bit dangerous. But I would also say that the answer there is that people shouldn't be in such precarious situations in terms of what it takes to survive. And if we're really worried about that, if the issue is how are they going to put food on their table for their kids, as opposed to like how are they going to maintain their status in a culture that is determined that they are not worthy of such cultural status, then we have government policies that we could pursue. That yeah. would inhibit the implications yeah. of losing your job
right,
to
right.
just status, as opposed to healthcare or housing or food. I mean, we could deal with that if we wanted to deal with that.
Yeah. Yeah. And it really does come down to those two things, right? It's status versus actually being able to provide for their family, right? So Milo Yiannopoulos, he's probably one of the best examples of someone being canceled, deplatformed, and he surely lost a lot of status. I don't know his financial situation now, if he's able to provide for his family, but he certainly lost a level of status that in this environment he didn't deserve in the first place because of what he peddled. And we have that right, right? I think that's the number one thing. They want to strip away from us the right to assert a level of parameters in terms of what's acceptable in our environment. And they want us to say that we should accept any and all types of tolerance. You know, everybody knows the tolerance paradox. Like, we should just be able to open up to any ideas and let them come in. But as a civilized society, we do have a right to say, you know, these are the type of things that the majority of us, I mean, what are you going to do? You cannot police thought millions of people if millions of people agree like, hey, that's not acceptable. And the only way you could change that is if you engage in the same type of totalitarian and authoritarian tactics that you claim to be opposed.
Right. And the only instances there was that instance of a Washington Post article, and I didn't really dig too deep into this, but there was a Washington Post article about a Halloween party from like 2 years ago. And a woman had shown up. She was in blackface, and I can't remember. I think she was like mocking somebody who had done a blackface costume, something to that effect. I think, you know, particularly in this era, I think people should be aware that it's not worth it. Like, even if you think that you're doing a parody, it's, you know, the opportunity for people to misinterpret it and to take offense. It's just not worth it. As like, you know, as in terms of just like, you know, why go out of your way to offend people? But the idea that the Washington Post would write an article about this and ended up getting her fired, you know, 2 years later. I mean, she left the party. Mm-hmm. She apologized to everybody. But the idea that the Washington Post would use its power in this way to police a specific individual at a private event that took place 2 years ago, a private individual, to me seems rather messed up. But that is about like a power dynamic.
Yeah.
And that is that to me seems just like an abuse. And the fact that it was about blackface as opposed to anything else is almost irrelevant. It is just like the Washington Post should not be singling out individuals for things that they did wrong, whether like, you know, whatever it was that
I don't know. I mean, as you give me that story, like everything that you're saying, it sounds absolutely reasonable. Like somebody with that much power, an institution with that much power coming after an individual. My only question is, did that individual herself, was she a significant person? Was she like a politician? Was she, you know, was she a billionaire? I mean, if she was just a regular citizen who did something wrong, like, or did something ignorant, not necessarily wrong, but definitely stupid, then what the hell is wrong with the Washington Post? Like, you know, that's like, that literally is like somebody with a million followers coming after somebody with two followers. Like what's going on over there? But
right.
But
again, and that's an editor who just made a very, very poor choice, it seems to me. But it's a very different thing when there's like a culture of like, when the people reading your paper say,
why is this even in here?
This op-ed writer is a joke and we don't like them and criticize them. Well, I'm sorry. You know, that's like,
that's not,
don't be an op-ed writer of a major newspaper.
Yeah. I fully expect culture is going to change, Sam. And I fully expect that some, you know, 50 years, if America's still here and climate change hasn't destroyed us, 100 years from now, the majority of us will be canceled for something that we don't even see coming. Right. Look, for instance, I mean, honestly, I posted a picture of me grilling one day, some ribs, and I caught it. From a couple of people. And then in full context, I didn't get mad about that. I'm not upset because a whole lot of people disagree with the way that I was displaying dead flesh cooking and grilling. I took it to heart. And then I really took a step back and said, you know what? In about 100 years, we'll probably all be canceled for some of the things that we do right now. That's not going to be acceptable then, but that's human progress. And if you hate that, then I don't know what to tell you.
That's a good place to end it, Ben. Ben Dixon, the proprietor of the Benjamin Dixon Show. Always a pleasure, Ben. Hang in there. Sorry about your governor.
Yeah. Well, I'm leaving the state, so I'm not worried about him too much.
Oh, yeah? Where are you going?
Back to Boston.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah. I'm going back to Boston. So I'll fill you in offline about that.
Okay, good. I'm excited to hear about
it. But it's all good stuff. It's all good stuff. So,
you know, the... should think about Worcester. They got the the Paw Sox are moving
there
to Woo Sox. But we can talk about that later.
It took me forever to learn how to pronounce that word when I was there the first time. So
I understand. I understand. Believe
Thanks
me.
For having me, Sam. It's always a pleasure.
Ben Dixon, always a pleasure. Thanks, man. Right. Appreciate
take
it.
Take care. You too now.
All right, folks. We're going to take a are we even going to take a break? Or are we just going to roll right into Matthew Film Guy?
We're rolling right into him.
I love it. Let's do this. Oh, well, first we need a you know, it's so weird to do the to do the theme songs when you have a Zoom, but let it roll.
Matthew, the film guy, is choosing your streams. Cassavetes on Netflix and other such themes.
Maybe
Matthew Film Guy.
Oh my gosh. Look at you. You got a whole, it's like you got a second head underneath your chin. That is a huge beard.
I have successfully foregone any haircuts or beard trims since this whole thing started. So
do you have a ponytail too? Is there a ponytail back there?
Ponytail? No.
Oh, all right.
Just my normal.
It looks like you got a haircut. Your hair doesn't look that
long. It's just
long.
No, it's just so long. It's just slicked down. It's just like under its own weight, you know.
All right, fair enough. Well, so, wow, you really have not shaven. That is quite a beard you got going there, dude.
I mean, when else I'm going for the sort of castaway chic, you know? When else am I going to have this opportunity?
That was what my justification was, you know, in the first couple of months. But then I was just like, it's just driving me too crazy.
I'm getting some serious pushback at home, but you know what? It's just another struggle in the life of a neurodivergent film guy. I mean,
I understand. You know, what now, can are you do? Actually neurodivergent? You're not.
Can I self-diagnose? Probably. It takes a really kind of
I know, that you self-medicate, but I,
right?
I don't know if you can self-diagnose.
So it follows. I mean, I self-diagnose, and then I write a prescription, and then I fulfill the prescription. But, you know, so, look, it takes a certain neurodivergence to be obsessive about any topic and to watch as many films as I do and to kind of, you know, have that sort of obsession. I don't know. Listen, I'm not an expert, so I'll leave that to the experts as to, you know, but I've taken some tests.
Okay, I'm glad to hear that. Now, Matthew, if I'm not mistaken, you are in one of maybe two of the counties that it was hit the hardest by coronavirus in the country. Is that right?
Queens County is? Really? Okay.
All right.
I wasn't aware of that. Listen, I am inside. I am masked up. I've got four different kinds of masks. I don't go anywhere except for like sort of the essentials. You know, I went to the hardware store this week and I thought like, wow, Safari, you know, but.
And everybody's wearing masks. I mean, in New York, mask compliance feels like it's like 90-95%. No,
I want to say I've seen a little slippage in Astoria. I've been proud of my neighborhood pretty well, but especially now at night, you know, it's like the lid's coming off a little bit. The restaurants are open up again. There's some drinking in the streets. There's a little bit of the Mad Maxy feel is coming back into the streets. The fireworks have abated somewhat. But, you know, listen, I'm content to stay at home in my nice, cozy, private living room, movie theater, and just let the world go by for a little bit at night.
Are you able to work from there? Are you doing your online classes, correct?
Yep. The big thing I'm doing is producing the new Ted Alexandro show live stream with the help of Mr. Kyle Shank, setting us up with a little bit of that Primo Majority Report developed technology.
Fans.fm stuff.
Fans.fm. He's like a Johnny Appleseed for online streaming content. And you know Ted, you've had him on the show a number of times to hear me talk about him.
Of course, I remember.
So if anyone's interested in that show,
that I was not involved in.
Well, you could be a guest on the Ted Alexandro show now. Go to Ted Alexandro's Patreon, you know, / Ted Alexandro, and you can figure out the levels at which you might want to support the show. Not that would get you in on it as a guest.
Say,
you
like, already, I got to support the show. I got to become a Patreon to get.
That was not for you. That was more for the general audience. But yes,
when is that on?
Mondays and Thursdays at 7 p.m. So not at the same time as Majority Report, and it's like an hour live streaming thing, and it's funny. You know, he's a politically oriented comedian, although now comedy is basically hazardous to your health, so no more stand-up comedy for the foreseeable future,
right?
And you know, he was opening for Jim Gaffigan for the past couple years. He was his main opener, and that's all gone away, so it's all being funneled into this live stream scenario.
Yeah, comedians are having a tough time of it. I would imagine from a financial standpoint, a lot of those folks.
A little bit, but it's also been good because it's forcing them to sort of get on more like one-on-one relationship with their audience now. You know, the people who used to want to go see them when they came to town now are getting to see them, you know, in their living rooms twice a week. So it's kind of upside downside to it all.
And,
it's been fun.
You're teaching the film class, of course.
Yes, absolutely. People can still go to commonpointqueens.org to sign up if they're interested. I think we had a few people come on board from putting it out over the Majority Report link. But yeah, film appreciation class. It's not super heady. It's like we have a kind of a talk with some very intellectually curious, mostly middle to elderly aged women in the Jewish community. But we're showing some challenging films there. I'm pushing some boundaries. I'm trying to break people out of their neurotypicality.
Are you watching a lot of TV and movies during this time? Because I have found, I have found, like, I don't know that if I have watched a single movie or TV show, including, you know, even like the news, in months at this point.
Well, I don't get that's too big of a change from your normal viewing habits, right? You're a news junkie. You're consuming what you got to do for work, right? And then you're too burnt out to pay attention to anything else, right?
Yeah, that's largely true. But I've never gone this far without watching anything. Like, and I think part of it is like, you know, maybe Survivor's on break. And but I'm just curious if it's me or if it's everybody's habits. I mean, I you know, part is like this working full time and having kids and no babysitter ever is exhausting.
And so
that's part of it. Like, I just like, I could just lie on my bed and hold my phone in front of my face and read Twitter instead of like actually having to get up and watch TV.
Well, look, I have to fight the urge to just like mindlessly scroll social media too. Like, it sucks you into a level that I feel like the kind of movies I'm trying to push on people is meant to break you out of, or at least to get you some strength in that ability to pay subtle attention. Whereas, you know, the social media, it's like crack, and I get sucked into it too. I can't tell you how many hours I've wasted, you know, telling myself, oh, I'm reading some intellectual articles, but it's still just sort of going by in a blur, where I may have planned to, like, let's sit down and watch a 2.5 hour movie. And then next thing you know, 2.5 hours has gone by and you sort of just had the sugar rush. So it's a struggle. Yeah. Even for someone who identifies as a film guy, it's definitely been difficult. Even no kids, just two dogs that I have to walk.
It occurs to me now that I have watched a bunch of movies. They have been all with my son.
Nice.
I went to a drive-through the other night, a drive-in, like when the first one I've been in decades, probably. Saw awesome. Jurassic Park for the first time. Was really impressed with how underdeveloped that stuff was in some way, like the theme of all that.
Never seen Jurassic Park before? The original?
Never saw it.
The 93?
Never
saw it.
And it's just like they let that guy who created that whole island just off the hook completely. Like, there was like, he was almost like I don't know. He was
oops. I almost killed everybody.
I almost killed everybody, including my grandchildren.
Like, it's startup culture. Startup culture. You know, a lot of waste. You know, it's got to be.
The development of that character was pretty weak. And then I've also watched. I've watched the four. Superman 1, 2, 3, and 4 with Christopher Reeves.
You went all the way to 4?
I got a 7-year-old.
I mean, that's
believe
that one is a laugh riot. That is when the bottom fell out of superhero movies for decades.
Yeah,
but that had a theme.
Yeah, it did have a theme. I can see why it ended the franchise. I'm going to try and move them on to Spider-Man, I think, soon. And I mean, this is that my whole all of my television consumption is just like, I got him on Phineas and Ferb, which I think is a huge upgrade for him. And like, I keep waiting till he's old enough to watch the Bond movies.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and that was a big quote unquote bonding experience with me and my dad.
What age was that?
I'd say 8. 7 or 8. I was 8 when Octopussy came out, and he took me to see that in the theater. That was the first one I saw. So,
okay. All right. Fair enough.
I wasn't getting the double entendres until some years later, but you know, the action spy stuff, it landed.
All right. So,
you know, my go-to comfort viewing like that, and maybe Saul's a little too young for it still, maybe, is the DC animated universe. Like, that's the stuff that's like, guys my age who grew up watching the Super Friends cartoons decided to make Batman and Superman over with an adult style theme to it. So they curse and they have sex, but it's like still superhero nonsense. Those are the ones that animated. Yeah. They come out on DVD and you can probably stream them on DC Plus now, but that's been my like real just junk food that I've been consuming. I've seen some of them before. People can go follow me on letterboxd.com/LangdonBoom and they can see the schizophrenic nature of like the high art movies mixed in with like the really low grade superhero animation, but they're done well. And you know, they're actually pretty emotionally moving for, you know, people flying around and shooting each other more than the live action movies, I would say. But you know, I'm trying to deepen my ability to pay attention, and that's the struggle in this chaotic time.
All right, well, let's hear what you got here, Matthew, for us. I am determined to that I am going to that I'm going to watch a movie that's going to take me out of the mode that I in the sloppy
the neurotypical mode that you're in, if I may use that word.
Yes,
I mean it's we joke, but that's really what I feel like a great movie is able to do, is to rewire your brain or to bring it onto a frequency that, let's face it, most of these great filmmakers I would consider neuroatypical. That's who I want to see the world through the lens of. You know, I started getting into this Thai director whose films have been very highly acclaimed, and I'm going to butcher his name, but it's Apichipong Weerasethakul. Yeah. Somebody else knows it better than me, but he made a movie called Tropical Malady that's like half like gay relationship drama told in a kind of abstract neorealist style, and half almost like folktale like horror film. And they're kind of very related. They're like two halves of the same whole. And that one really is like, you've got to dig in. But I think a better one for you, actually, which is in some ways even more difficult, even though it has more historical narrative content to it, is a movie called Zama by Lucrezia Martel, who's become one of my favorite modern filmmakers. She's an Argentinian woman who's made only about four movies in the past 10 years. But Zama is like about a bureaucrat in the, basically, I think it's the early 18th century in Argentina, who's just like, you know, beat up. He wants to go to Spain where he's never been. You know, the Spanish still rule that area. And
bureaucrat,
it's really
in the 18th
trippy.
Century?
Yeah. Yeah. So they've been established there for quite a while, you know, but there's still this relationship between the sort of European government and the natives. And to tell you more would not even make any difference, because it's very oblique as a narrative, but it's got very sort of attention to detail in terms of the setting and the time frame, but it doesn't give you almost any narrative sort of plot information. So you're really having to pay attention. But by the end of it, you feel like you've had some kind of amazing trip. So that's one that's, you know, I showed that to my class and I got like almost unanimous pushback. Like, what was that? But then after the discussion and you dig in, and you kind of pull it apart, you realize like the areas that you're kind of a little troubled by are exactly what are amazing about this kind of an experience.
Okay. Zama. Is that the one that you're recommending to everybody, or is that just for me?
For you, for you, definitely. No, everybody should see Zama. But one for you that's a little less demanding, but it's actually just like a great genre movie, like a modern bank robber film noir
Ronin?
Genre movie. No, I know you love Ronin. So this is in the vein of Ronin.
Okay.
Hell or High Water. With Jeff Bridges and Chris Pine. That is a great, I hear some ascent on the line there. Yeah, that's just like a really well done genre movie, a throwback to kind of the 20s and 30s, where the film noir kind of bank robbers were driven by their sort of financial straits. So it's got kind of the banks are screwing the everyman kind of platitude behind it. But it's really a great just like action movie. One of the better examples of
that's
that
a fairly
genre.
Recent film, isn't it? Because I feel like I saw that on a plane like a year ago or something, back when we used to take planes.
2016. Yeah, okay. 2016. So that's one that's a more of a just like, I think you would enjoy it. Little too adult content, violence for Saul at this point, probably.
Right. Fair enough. All right. So Zama and Hell and High Water.
Yeah, and another whole genre that I've been finding myself getting into, maybe because I feel like New York City is sort of sliding back into a kind of earlier sort of destitution and chaos. I've been watching all the early...
Warriors? You're going to tell us to watch
Warriors? No, but Warriors is like the cartoon version, but I've been watching like Wild Style, which was one of the original sort of hip-hop movies. It's sort of a fictional version of a documentary called Style Wars, which everybody should definitely see, which basically was the first sort of public sort of exploration of, you know, graffiti, breakdancing, hip hop, you know, rap, DJ, all that stuff. And Wild Style is sort of the narrative version of it, but it features a lot of great sort of docu-style rapping from the early rap pioneers like Busy Bee Starsky and The Treacherous Three and guys like that.
Matthew,
so I went into that. Beat Street, yeah.
How, like, you know, you how many movies do you watch that you stop watching? Because you have all these movies.
Zero.
You never, ever walk out on a film, as it were?
Not for years. I will power through it. If I have to pause it and come back to it, that's like the worst thing I can say about it. But there are, yeah, I've powered through some stinkers.
Now, why is that? Why is that?
Because, you know what, look, I take my job as a film guy seriously. Not that anybody's necessarily putting me up to it all the time. But I feel like if I can't have seen the entire film, I can't have had a fully informed opinion about it. You know, actually, we get into a lot of domestic dust-ups about, like, who can get up during the movie, who can go to the bathroom during the movie, how quiet it needs to be. If it's this kind of movie, we don't care. If it's that kind of movie, we do. You know, I just made myself watch that terrible Harley Quinn Birds of Prey action movie. It's literally a superhero movie. One of the worst excuses for a film ever, and I couldn't believe I finished it.
We should have you on one time to do, like, a list of a dozen films you should absolutely not see.
Like, stay away. I did the hard work for you. Well, do not bother.
Like, that's always my concern is, like, you know, like, I'm the type of person who is like, I always put good money after bad. And so if I'm watching a movie for 20 minutes, I'm like, this thing sucks. But
yeah,
watch it for 20 minutes. I got to keep watching it. I don't want to do that. Yeah.
Well, look, there's the scroll your phone during the movies. Like, that's when you know it's over, when you're just like, where's
the... I guess.
Give me drug instead. I would say
Superman,
Harley Quinn.
That was
and
Superman.
Superman 4.
Two.
Come on. Two's the best. Kneel Before Zod. That's classic. But yeah, I would say that Harley Quinn Birds of Prey movie, do not bother. If you're a masochist about superhero films, don't even try it.
Matthew Film Guy, it is always a pleasure. I'm glad to see that you're staying so healthy. At the very least, your ability to grow facial hair seems to be completely unencumbered.
Unabated.
I'm very happy to see that you are surviving and in many respects thriving, as it were.
Follically, if not any other way.
Exactly. Matthew Film Guy, folks can find your thing at, what is it called? Box?
Letterboxed with no E, letterboxd.com/LangdonBoom, or they can follow me on Twitter at LangdonBoom. I'm there too.
Are you selling stuff on eBay, or are you done with that?
I don't know. Let's see. My mom sent me a Dan Marino jersey, if anybody wants to pick this up. It's brand new. Let's see. We got some DVDs. I don't know if anybody wants the pilot of Lucky Louie anymore. It's still sealed. I think this might be Mary's, but I don't know. I'm selling it. I'm co-signing or consigning. Gateways to Now, listening to some Eckhart Tolle in this time. Sure. It's very good. Very good. Very good. This is a terrible movie that I watched just because it was taking place in Astoria, Queens. So it's like my neighborhood. I recognize Hellgate Bridge.
Should I sell like all my DVDs?
Oh, yeah. Quickly. But for you, I would sign them and then, you know, sell them on my eBay.
Why quickly?
Well, because there's just the market is dropping out on them, basically. Well, some people are collectors, like the Criterion people. They keep them in a shrine and they really adore their physical media. But to me, physical media is, you know, you should make a copy of your downloads and save them on a hard drive so you can't be at the mercy of the streaming companies if you can. But
how do you do that?
We'll talk off air. There's ways. Have you heard of this show, by the way, Sam? The Great American Dream Machine. Do you remember this? You were probably too young.
I know. I do vaguely remember that.
I just got this. I haven't actually watched it yet, and I'll probably sell it once I watch it. But it's got some early Albert Brooks shorts on it. It's got people like Henry Winkler and Chevy Chase. It's like a mix between the Kentucky Fried Movie people and early Saturday Night Live. It was on PBS. So I just found out that this was on DVD, so I'm excited to watch this. But soon to be available on my eBay.
All right. Well, there you go. Matthew Film Guy, as always, a pleasure. Thank you.
Same here, Sam. Take care.
All right. Bye-bye. All right, folks. We're going to head into you can leave now, Adi. Okay, there you go. Folks, we're going to head into the fun half. Just a reminder, it is your support that makes this show possible. You can become a member by going to jointhemajorityreport.com. When you do, you support this program, and you get extra content, and you get the free show free of ads. Also, the AM Quickie. Check it out, folks. A lot of people are saying a lot of things about it. And over the next 8 weeks, it's going to be very technically good. Also, on top of that, we've got merch, shop.majorityreportradio.com. I think we're going to have the...
I'm losing it, bro.
T-shirts, maybe a couple more days. And then we're going to stop the pre-orders. So if you want to get the...
I'm losing it, bro.
All proceeds go to skidrow.org. And, of course, our masks go to the Northwest Immigration Rights Project. I think that's the first time I've ever said it correctly. But all of our proceeds go to that for the mask. All the proceeds for the I'm Losing It, Bro, go to skidrow.org. Check out those, and you can buy the hats or you can buy the mugs. And I think we're putting up the pencils too, right, Brendan?
Once we do you give official approval on that?
Sure.
I think you said no to one of them.
I said no to one thing. I can't remember what it was. Like, right, I don't like the logo masks. I don't like that. But I like the mask that we have, and that's sufficient, I think. That sends the message. I don't want to put our logo on the mask. I think that's a little bit, well, maybe down the road. I don't know. We'll see. Folks, also, justcoffee.coop, fair trade coffee, tea, or chocolate. Use the coupon code MAJORITY. Get 10% off of that. Don't forget TMBS this week. The Michael Brooks Show. Matt, who was on the Michael Brooks Show this week?
Media historian Robert McChesney. We had him on. And actually, I can pair that in with the Literary Hangover plug, because on Twitch, I listened to one of Robert McChesney's books while played Death's... the one about... I forget the name of it, but it's about the sort of corporate structure of media in the 20s with like RCA and how that set us up for our corporate... Yeah, it's from like 1993. Really good one.
Also, don't forget Nomiki's show. Find it at patreon.com, The Nomiki Show, or youtube.com, The Nomiki Show. And The Antifada. Jamie's going to be on the this afternoon after this show. She's going to be doing a live stream on the Socialist Conference. So check that out, for gosh sakes. And of course, plenty of content on the Antifada. Here we go. Donald Trump teased it. The Trump administration is likely to issue an executive order today to seeking to ban undocumented immigrants from being counted in the census. Now, this is just an attempt to confuse things, because the census is quite clear. And I should say the Constitution is quite clear on what the census is to do. It is to count every individual present in the country. Not citizen, not immigrant with papers, not immigrants without papers. Every individual in the country at the time of the census is to be counted. This is a constitutional requirement. So they can issue this executive order. It is really just a political way of creating some type of fight. The Supreme Court should reject it, it seems to me. But we shall see. All right, quick break. 646-257-3920.
We have Jamie if we want to. Here's Jamie.
Yeah, bring her on.
Yeah, she'll be right here. One second. I think Jamie, you there? Oh, she might not be there.
Yeah, I'm here.
Oh, there you go.
Can you hear me?
Yep, we can.
Excellent.
So Jamie, I pitched the Socialist Conference this afternoon that you're going to be on. What else you got on the Antifada?
Well, this week, we released an epic two-part History is a Weapon with Sean KB, Matt Chrisman, and our staff ufologist, A.M. Gitlitz. He has many names. I think that's the version he's using right now. They talk about conspiracy theories, the deep state, the parapolitical, and all kinds of great stuff. And I'm sure it has at least one amazing history rant from Matt in there. So check that out, patreon.com/theantifada. Also, I should say the title of my socialism panel, which I'm getting psyched to do again, is Socialist Organizing and the Capitalist State. I will be on this panel with Eric Blanc, a fellow member of DSA, and it is at 7 p.m. Eastern, and I'll put a link to it in the blog post.
All right, quick break, fun half.
Left is best.
Jamie and I may have a disagreement.
Yeah, you can't just say whatever you want about people just because you're rich.
I have an absolute right to mock them on YouTube.
He's up there buggy whipping like he's the boss.
I am not your employer.
You know, I'm tired of the negativity.
I'm sorry, I didn't mean to upset you. You're nervous, you're a little bit upset, you're riled up.
Yeah, maybe you should rethink your defense of that, you fucking idiots.
We're just going to get rid of you.
All right.
But dude. You want to smoke this joint?
Yes.
Do you feel like you are a dinosaur?
That's good shit.
Exactly. I'm happy now.
It's a win-win.
It's a win-win-win.
Oh, hell yeah.
Now listen to me. 2, 3, 4, 5 times. 847-906-501-457. 2, 38, 56, 27. 1/2, 5/8, 3.9 billion.
Wow.
He's the ultimate math nerd.
Don't you see?
Why don't you get a real job instead of spewing vitriol and hatred, you left-wing Limbaugh?
Everybody's taking their dumb juice today.
Come on, Sammy.
Dance, dance, dance. My first post-coital scene with a woman. I'm hoping to add more moves to my repertoire. All I have is the dip and the swirl.
Fine, we can double dip.
Yes, this is a perfect moment.
No.
Wait, what?
You make under $1 million a year. You're scum. You're nothing.
Excuse me? Fuck you, you fucking liberal elite. I think you belong in jail.
Thank you for saying that, Sam. You're a horrible, despicable person.
All right, gonna take a quick break. I want to take a moment to talk to some of the libertarians out there. Take whatever vehicle you want to drive to the library. What you're talking about is jibber jab.
Classic. I'm feeling more chill already.
Good.
Donald Trump can kiss all of our asses.
Hey, Sam. Hey, Andy. You guys ready to do some evil?
Hitler was such an idiot.
I think I might be a Nazi.
Agree.
No.
Death to America.
You.
Yes.
Wow.
Wow, that's weird. No way! Unbelievable. This guy's got a really good hook.
Throw our hands up.
Ooh. Wow.
But Sam, I gotta get off.
No worries. Let's. I want to just flesh this out a little bit. I mean, look, it's a free speech issue. If you don't like me,
hey, shut up.
Thank you for calling into the Majority Report. Sam will be with you shortly.